I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello.
Dave, how are you, my friend?
I'm well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, I'm keeping my head above water, and I'm healthy, and I'm happy enough with the situation that I'm in. And yeah, you just got to take each day as it comes, haven't you, and remain optimistic and positive.
You know what? That's the same path I'm on. You know, I can't complain. You know, I'm surrounded by some great people and feeling good, healthy, and optimistic, you know.
I'm glad to hear it. When, where, and what was your last show that you played? Was it the Bungle gigs that you did just before lockdown?
Yeah, I believe it might have. It was San Francisco, February 14th.
Valentine's Day, a very romantic night out.
Yeah.
So at that point, you obviously didn't know that the curtains were coming down and that that was going to be your last show for a while. You can't have known at that stage, right?
No, we didn't know. Nobody knew at that time. Although, while I was in the studio recording the Dead Cross record, which was at the end of December, I remember a friend of the guitar player or the bass player, he had come in and you know, just to hang out with us, and everyone was chatting. And I remember he said something in passing, which was like, well, let's hope that virus doesn't hit the States,
right,
or a pandemic or something, alluding to, you know, to what was going to happen. And, but, you know, of course that, you know, that comment, you know, came and went, and, you know, I didn't think about it again until later. It's like, is this what this guy was talking about, you know? Nobody saw it coming.
You alluded to Dead Cross there, and I want to get to Dead Cross in a bit, and I'm very excited to hear that there's a new record by that band on the horizon. It seems like 2020 isn't all bad. But the shows you were doing with Bungle were a celebration, right, of the band's like early demo, The Raging Wrath of the Easter Bunny. So were you taking that record and basically performing it in its entirety and then throwing in like other tracks along the way? What were the sort of average set lists around that time when you were out playing with the Bungle guys?
Let me look at my file here, because I have a file for, you know, all the notes and everything from every band I'm performing with.
And that includes the past as well, does it, Dave? Do you keep everything?
No, not really. I mean, I might have some stuff from the past, but, you know, not much. Now that I'm juggling so many projects, I need to file, you know, these notes and such in a way where I could, refer to them later on.
Sounds very organized.
Yeah. No.
Hence the files.
Exactly. Yeah, and sure enough, speakerphone here.
No worries. And that was Scott. Scott was out with you at the shows as well, was he?
Yeah, you know what? I think we're out of luck.
That's all good.
Yeah,
out with
luck.
Out with the old, in with the new. There's space for when gigs return.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I said out with the old, in with the new. There's space for more set lists when gigs return.
Right.
How were the shows, though? Were they good fun? Was it your first time playing in Bungle?
Yes, was my first time, and yeah, they were a lot of fun. You know, I played with Trevor and Mike, you know, obviously in Phantomus, and always, you know, their potential and their you know, musical capabilities are just beyond, you know, anything I've ever played with, you know, any kind of musician I've ever played with before. And, you know, so working with them, you know, was great. It was, you know, exciting as always. But the one guy that really surprised me, which shouldn't have been a surprise because of the caliber of musicians he performs with, you know, in Secret Chiefs, and he also performs with John Zorn and several other bands. And he were the leads was the guitar playing by Trey.
Yep.
And it was phenomenal. There was one time after one of the shows, you know, laid in bed looking at some of the footage, you know, that some of, you know, the fans, you know, post. This was like after a show, I'm exhausted, you know. And man, I heard this lead that just blew me away. And, you know, it just, I like hearing that. I like hearing, you know, music that that moves me and excites me. And when I heard the lead, I was just like, man, this guy blows me away. And as a matter of fact, blows away a lot of metal guitar players, you know. So it was awesome. It was really exciting to perform with all of them. And Scott Ian as well, you know. He's an amazing, amazing rhythm guitar player. He holds it down, you know, and he's perfect, you know, to play along to, because, you know, he's a solid musician.
I'd love to get a bit of history, Dave. Obviously, I imagine you and Scott go back to the early days of Slayer and Anthrax. And obviously, you know, the other three guys were, you know, high school friends, right? They were all kind of kids that grew up together and started this band when they were still in high school. How do you and Mike Patton first meet?
I believe it had to have been back in 98, 99. I don't recall when the last Los Angeles Faith No More show was before they split up, at that period. So, you know, I don't know. I'm thinking it might have been 97, 98. I had gone to Faith No More show in Los Angeles, and I ended up hanging out with everyone backstage. And that's when I first met Mike. And then he called me a year later, or maybe months later, and asked me to be a part of, you know, Phantomus. And at that point, you know, we've never looked back. It's been great. We've had a lot of great moments, and you know, we're longtime friends. You know, it's awesome.
Those Phantomus records are far out. They're so out there. I listened to the first two earlier today. The second one, I really enjoyed that one, because a lot of those movies that you're scoring are some of my favorite films from that great era of like New Hollywood in the 70s. The first one, I was like, fucking hell, this is just a wild, wild ride. I mean, what was it like after you'd left Slayer and you begin working? You did four records, right, as Phantomas. Is that kind of a project that will continue again at a later date, do you think? Or are those first four records kind of it, do you think?
I hope. I really hope that Fantomas comes back in one form or another.
Yep.
I don't think that people really got a chance to experience that band. And now, you know, I'm sure people look back and it's almost like a legend. You know, people really don't see how we could have performed this live, although it's been documented and it's out there.
Yeah, yeah. You did the movie soundtrack album, didn't you? You did that one live.
We did that live. We did the first album in its entirety live. So it's definitely possible. So, you know, people that are in disbelief, they get a surprise. But I do wish that, you know, we could, bring that back. It is complicated. That music goes beyond any rehearsals that I've ever been a part of. The one, I think, classic moment between all of us is like, wow, we've just spent 2.5 hours on 3 seconds of music, 4 seconds of music.
Incredible.
And you might say, oh, these guys, you know, they can't play three seconds of music. You just have to listen to how complex and how detailed Mike wrote this music, and we had to perform it. There was no slagging or, oh, I'll just do this to cheat a little bit. No, you got to do it like this, you know, or it has to be played like this. And I remember specifically the guitar players are like, wow, I have to go from this part of the neck all the way down here and, you know, and try to hit these notes. And, you know, it was challenging, you know, or, you know, one of Buzz's favorite lines, you know, all right, guys, we've been working on this for a while. Should we do it one more time? And then Buzz says, I don't know. Do we have 3 seconds of time in our life, you know, to do this? You know, he's a genius.
Yeah.
Patton's a genius.
What was your first impression of him when you met him? And then when you did get to first start creating and working, it must have been such a change of pace to Slayer and such a refreshing new experience for you. And as you say, he's a creative force, but like on a personal level, did you connect as well?
Yes, absolutely. We all connected, especially Patton and I. I don't know what it is. You know, you go through life and you find people you get along with, you know, and people that you don't. And I've been lucky enough, you know, to be in bands with, you know, with a lot of people that I've gotten along with. And Patton is one of them. He's like a comrade. He's a cohort. He's like everything. He's a friend. And, you know, I can call him and I know he's there, and he's called me at times where I've needed, you know, to talk to someone, and he's been there. And, you know, so it's definitely special, and I'm happy to be a part of, you know, not only Bungle, but Fantomas and also Dead Cross.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Dead Cross, Dave, because that album, the first one in the EP, I adore so much. There's just there's so much attitude and swagger and heaviness. And I guess, you know, over the years, you've released your own projects through Mike's label, as well as working with Mike directly, right? Like you had the film debut album was out on his label. Were you always going to approach Mike to sing in that band, or did it kind of come about that you were asking him to put the record out and then you were still looking for a vocalist? How did he come to be involved with that project, and how does that get off the ground?
Well, that was kind of funny because we had formed the band Dead Cross. And you know, the idea of vocalist came up, and you know, we considered the original vocalist, which was the drummer for the Locust, Gabe Serbian, but he couldn't. He was in a moment where he couldn't work with us. So we said, no problem, man. Just we'll go ahead and, you know, find someone else. So we approached Travis Ryan from Cattle Decapitation,
And I said, Travis, would you be interested? And he was. I said, well, I have one more vocalist to ask. So just hang on tight. And it was funny because I received a text from Patton. And he said, hey, Dave, if the Dead Cross record needs a home, let me know. You're more than welcome. And, you know, of course, you know, said thank you. And I don't know if it was that day that he hit me up about putting out the Dead Cross record or a couple of days later. But I had discussed with the other band members and I said, hey, how about us hitting up Patton? And you know, they were like, yeah, sure, that'd be great. And just out of the blue, I hit him up and I say, hey, man, you know, we ran into some difficulty in completing the record. You know, Gabe isn't on board and we were wondering if you'd be interested. And, you know, when you're text messaging, you know, you see sometimes when the other person is typing. And
of course,
I see him typing and the typing stops.
It's never a good sign, is it? It always gets you really wound up and worked up, that does.
And then the typing, it continues. And I believe he said something like, me? You want me to sing on this? And he said, I would love to. And I was just through the roof. I sent the other band members, you know, message, hey, he's in. And they were like, what? So we got the tracks together and sent it over to him and he loved it and started banging them out. And I'll never forget receiving like at 1 a.m., 2 a.m., you know, these tracks. And, you know, my phone would light up and I'd wake up, oh no, Patton, he just sent another song. And, you know, listening to it, you know, in the middle of the night. And it's been great since. And right now, we completed the album. I completed the drum tracks. It was like, I think right before New Year's, around Christmas time. And then the rest of the guitar player and the bass player finished their tracking sometime in January. And right now we've been receiving, tracks from Patton with some of his vocals. And we're really excited to get that, you know, monster record out.
Is there a release date in mind? Is it going to be like next year, early next year, late next year? When's it going to be, do you think?
We don't have an exact time frame yet. It's definitely sometime next year.
Right on.
Yeah, really, there's no rush, obviously. And
I'm just being selfish because I'm excited to hear it. Honestly,
oh, I know.
I love that first record and EP so much. They're such raucous, just amazing kind of hardcore thrash punk, just explosions of energy and melody. And Ross produced the first record, right? Has he done this latest one as well? What's the deal with the?
Yeah,
yeah, he has. Yeah,
he did. Yeah.
That's Ross Robinson for anyone listening.
Yeah, he's definitely on board for this one. He's worked on it with us and you know, which is great because we have the basic structures and the basic ideas for the songs, and then we get into the studio and we work with him and he, you know, throws out some ideas, you know, typical, you know, producer, you know, role, which I really like. And he just helps put the songs together with us and adds more ideas. And, you know, it's just a great working relationship, you know, that I've had with Ross now for a while. And
where does that relationship with him begin?
Probably 2013 or 14. There was a project I had done with him that never saw the light of day, but I think the song will be released sometime. One of the songs that I worked with him back then will be released, and the proceeds are going to save this this company called Save the Stages.
Yep.
And it's like a nonprofit, and of course it's to help, people that work, in the music and the theater world and music industry. That'll hopefully be out soon. So I can't give you any details. I haven't got a press release. I'm still under, lock and key when it comes to that subject.
That's all good, man. Well, hopefully it isn't this. And if it is, I can take this out. But I gather that you were working for quite a while on a record with Casey Chaos, who's a good pal of mine. And I mean, do you know anything about that? Because he seems to have been working on that thing for years and years and years and years and years. And I'm like, Casey, when are you going to put this album out, man? And he's like, I'm doing new stuff now, more tracks. And he said he had you drumming on a bunch of the stuff. It's not that project, is it, that's going to go to the Save the Stages thing?
No.
Cool. Okay, no, we can keep we can keep this in then.
No, that's not it.
You know anything about Casey's project, or is that just, there's a big question mark over that one?
You know, there's a big question mark over that. I recorded the tracks. There's something going on where I don't know, he hasn't finished the vocals or something, so I honestly don't know where that stands.
He's got to get
that
it
was
out.
Something that, yeah, that's something that I recorded. I was done with it, and I never heard anything about that again.
How about Ross as a producer, on a working level? Because he's one of those characters. There's stories and, there's almost like a mythology around that dude of some of the stuff that he's like not put the performers through, but coaxed out of them, right, to get these amazing results that he's gotten over the years. Obviously, you're not the vocalist, so he's perhaps not coming at you from that angle. But does he drill you as a drummer and push you to, create the very best? Like, is it par excellence when you're in the studio with a guy like that? Is it intense? Is it fun? Is it light? Like, what's your experience been like of working with Ross?
For me, I mean, I've heard those stories as well, making vocalists cry.
Yeah.
And getting the vocalist to feel a certain rage and an anger and to channel that, in the recording of their music, which I find very positive and a good attribute to have as a producer, because one of my favorite, moments and experience with a legitimate producer was working with Rick Rubin.
Of course.
And I find, that kind of like, I don't know what the word could be, like the support or just the enthusiasm in which, a producer motivates you, it matters. And I saw that same style in Rick Root, in Ross Robinson. And so for me, he doesn't need to get deep in trying to find certain emotions to make me sing in any way. For me, we have a joke kind of between him and I that, he said, "All right, Dave, imagine you're on your motorcycle." I used to ride motocross or, just trail riding on dirt bikes.
Yeah.
And he was an avid motocross fan. So we found that common thread, aside from music. So he said, "Imagine you're on a track and you're taking this turn, you're about to hit this jump. And, you're about to do it. And with that same adrenaline, he'll tell me, I want you to play this part with that same energy, where you don't know if you're going to land at the other end of the jump, but you're going to do it anyways. And then I'll turn to him and I'll say, without a helmet." And he said, "Yes, I'll do it without a helmet." So, I'll take it a step further and try to deliver the musical section the way he's envisioning it. And so for me, working with him, it's more about enthusiasm and having me work out a certain part with creativity and pushing the creativity boundaries and trying to get the best performance out of me. And so it, you know, in retrospect, that's what, you know, Ruben did for me, you know, back then. You know, I'll never forget him, you know, standing in a control booth and, you know, bobbing his head, you know, jamming to the song. And then when I pull off the drum roll, his arms go up in victory. It's like, yes, you know. And I don't know. It's fun working with the right producer, and it shouldn't be a moment of emotional pain or anything. Oh, I can't do this part or whatever. It shouldn't be like that. It should be, you know, an enjoyable time.
How important and central was Rick Rubin to the success of Slayer, do you think, in those early formative years when he was around and he was kind of actively guiding you guys, you know, sonically, creatively? How important was his role in that story, do you think?
He was like the fifth musician, you know, in the band at that time. You know, his ideas were so valuable that I feel that his part, you know, in honing in the band's sound and their songwriting style and structure, you know, was very, very extremely important. He taught us a lot, you know, in the idea or the notion that less is more, and, you know, less reverb on the entire mix, you know, tight, honing in the drum sound was important, and you know, and everything else that went along, you know, with his contribution. It was a big part of the band.
What about in a broader cultural sense, his role in, you know, music for a time was, you know, I think so exciting, and he was so linked to so much of the cross-pollination going on with Slayer and Beastie Boys, and, you know, I mean, it was a really kind of thriving time for cross-pollination, wasn't it? And Rick seemed to be like the guy that, you know, the alchemist almost in the lab, cooking up and encouraging that. Was that his role, do you think? Was that kind of what he was all about?
Well, I think that cross-pollination comes natural with a person that holds no boundaries when it comes to working with different musicians. There is one love, and that's the love for music and not love for a certain genre of music. So with his ability to work with several styles, I think that happens, you know, naturally. And, you know, I think, you know, the success of the band, with somebody at the helm, it gives a little more validity to the musicians and the direction and what the band was all about.
He just seems like such a cool guy as well. Very zen.
From what I remember, yes, he is. Yes.
What was your favorite Slayer album to make, Dave? Either just from the strength of the material, you think, or just the process of creating and having fun making it? Have you got a favorite that stands out as your particular favorite spot in your time in that band?
You know, I of course, the classics were fantastic. You know, Rain and Blood, South of Heaven, you know, Seasons, you know, Christ Illusion. But I think that one special album, I feel, and unfortunately Rick Rubin wasn't a part of it, but we had another producer, which was Greg Fiddleman, who is very close to Rick Rubin and the way he works. And I think it was World Painted Blood, because it was Hanneman's, you know, last enthusiastic effort to create a body of work that, you know, had more of his participation. You know, I that one is, because it is the most recent, is, and it's to me the last Slayer, you know, when the band was fully together, you know, with Hanneman, King, Orion, myself, you know, that album I feel has magic, and some of the parts I hold very dear to my heart, because I remember seeing Hanneman's enthusiasm towards the songs and his last writings. So I would have to say World Painted Blood.
Were you and Jeff close? Did you get on well with Jeff?
Yes. You know, when we were on tour, it was Hanneman and I hanging out on the tour bus, you know, before showtime and before soundcheck. You know, the other two members, either Tom was on his own tour bus or Carrie was inside the venue and in the dressing room, you know, because we all kind of like separated. Hanneman and I would be the ones, you know, on the bus, and, you know, I'd throw in music in the back of the bus, and, you know, he'd come in, who is this, you know, and ask me questions, and, you know, I would share different music that I've, you know, discovered, and then, you know, likewise, it was just, we would always joke and laugh, and, yeah, definitely, we got along.
You must really miss him, man. Like, I think when you lose someone like that, yeah, you've been through so much with, it must be so hard.
Yes. His wife, Kathy, hit me up yesterday, and, you know, she asked me if I would be okay with her releasing some photographs of Jeff and I. And I told her, absolutely, of course. And, you know, she said in her text message, you know, Jeff really loved you.
Oh.
And, you know, that was really cool, you know, and I know where that comes from, because, you know, Jeff, you know, has told me that, and you know, just little stories and little comments here and there and just little interactions that, you know, we had, there was something special, and I think the music really showed, you know, that camaraderie. So, good times.
And Kerry, Tom, any contact there, or have you just drifted away from those guys over the years?
Yeah, drifted away. Yeah.
And that's that, is it? You think that will just be a chapter in your life that was then and...
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes that happens, doesn't it? That's just, you know, you were saying earlier on, you get on with some people, you don't get on with the others. And sometimes in life you have to just go, well, that was then, this is now, that was a part of it, but it's not a part anymore.
Yeah. You do. You have to. You have to look at life that way. I mean, I believe psychologists have said, you know, and scholars have said, you know, you go through friends, you know, like in, I don't know if it's 5 or 10 year increments, probably somewhere in between that, you know, and there are some that stay with you for a long period of time. But, you know, it's part of growth, and music is definitely a big part of growth. And I think, you know, you just have to learn to roll with it.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to pop the question?
The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave, speaking of five-year increments, the last 5 years for you, forget about COVID for a minute, but beginning really, I think, in 2016, which was a huge year for you, you start playing in two of the greatest bands ever. And I want to go in first of all. Let's go into Misfits first. I gather that just from hearing you on a couple of other podcasts and interviews and things, you weren't, although you were into punk as a kid, you kind of missed the Misfits. Like, that was a little bit before your time, so you didn't actually grow up listening to them. And so when it came time to learn the material, you had to almost just approach it like a new band, which we will get into in a minute. But first of all, the offer to join them, how and when and, you know, where does that come from? And what was your immediate reaction when you get the call or the, you know, the word? How did it go down and what was your response?
All right. To get to that, let's look at the Misfits, one of the most iconic bands, punk bands of our time. And when I started getting into punk, Misfits already had ended. You know, Danzig, you know, had moved on, and I might have heard some of the songs, but at that time, you're always, at least for me, I was always searching for the heavier, the faster punk bands, you know, the ones with the most attitudes, the ones that their sound, you know, appealed to my what I wanted to hear in a band. And, you know, I would listen for the drummer, you know, drum sound, the energy, of course, you know, the vocalist and everything. So at that time, I was already getting into Minor Threat. You know, I was captivated by Ian McKay's vocals, you know, and Dead Kennedys, of course, you know, with Jello and the ferocity of the band and DJ Peligro, DH Peligro, I'm sorry. You know, his drumming was on fire, and still is. So I had already moved on from certain sounds, and I really didn't grasp the Misfits, you know, musical style. Then as time goes on, you see the Misfits logo. You see Metallica covering the Misfits.
Yep.
You start seeing how deep this music by this band has, you know, how much it's influenced and how deep in the blood of metal this music, you know, really is. So I received a phone call, well, actually a text message from Glenn Danzig's assistant. Hey, Dave, Glenn wants to talk to you. I expect a phone call from an unknown number. I said, all right. You know, several minutes later.
At that point, Dave, have you got any idea in your mind about what this call might be about? Or are you completely in the dark?
Completely in the dark.
Right.
And so I received this phone call and I start chatting with Glenn and he says, Dave, you know, look, we're going to get the Misfits back together. Jerry and I have resolved our issues. And, you know, he told Jerry that, all right, if you want to get another guitar player on stage, it's something along these lines. Don't quote me. You know, you could pick a guitar player, a second guitar player, but I am picking the drummer. I want Lombardo. And when he told me that, I was like, wow, thanks. He said, no, Dave, you're the guy for this. And he said that, you know, they plan on doing, you know, some stadium shows. He says, this is going to be big, Dave. And sure enough, we were selling out arenas and playing soccer stadiums in Los Angeles. And it was surreal. I couldn't believe it. And when I started listening to the music, I immediately fell in love with the songs, the rhythms, the melodies, the choruses, and I felt like I had missed out on something amazing in the late 70s, early 80s, and full of regret. I was like, damn, why didn't I get into this before? You know, but I realized that, you know, I was just in a different place. I was constantly evolving in my taste, you know, and love for certain styles of music. So as I started listening, I started falling in love with these songs and understanding what they were trying to do at that time, what the drummer was trying to do. And I tried to recreate these songs as close to what they were trying to deliver on their records. You know, I didn't want to add, you know, drum parts that people aren't going to recognize. I tried to stick to the original Misfits, and so far, they're super happy, you know, very pleased. And one of Jerry Only's quotes, I don't know what year Jerry Only was born, but I think he commented on the year that he was born. He said, man, bringing Lombardo in is like throwing a Lamborghini engine in a 57 Chevy. Something like that, you know. And so I'm really happy to be a part of the original Misfits. I love working with Doyle. I love working with Glenn and Jerry. He's just grade A human being.
That's cool that Glenn brought you in and you were Glenn's guy to begin with, but you've managed to form like close connections with all of them. That's a beautiful situation to be in, because sometimes, I guess, if you're brought into a project by one member and there's some tension between them and another, that can create a rift between you and that person, can't it? But that's cool.
But no, everybody is great. You know, everybody knows their position and knows, you know, what their part in this celebration of music is, you know, and the fact that they've, you know, put their differences aside after so many years of disputes and stuff.
Yeah.
It's great. It's great. And to see them on stage, you know, from my, you know, my side of my, from my view, it's awesome. It's still surreal.
Well, the drum seat's the best view in the house, right? It's got to be.
It is.
You see the crowd, you see their reactions, you see all the bandmates around you and their chemistry and interactions with each other. And I mean, if I could play, I'd definitely be wanting to be sat right there. Like, that's the best vantage point going for me.
You know, and you know what else has been amazing to experience, to say the least, was how loud the crowd sings to these, you know, sing along to these songs,
right,
that were written God knows how many years ago, and their fan base is so passionate that they're louder. I hear it from my monitors. I have earplugs on, my monitors are blasting, and you know, and I still hear, you know, the fans singing along to the songs. So that's how special, you know, this music is. And when, you know, my wife mentioned that she's out in the crowd, she's like, everybody's singing at the top of their lungs, and it's like a celebration, singing and dancing. And that's everybody in the stadium, you know, it's not just a couple people or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's thousands. And
they're probably
really
singing
really
along to every single word as well, right? Not just the choruses.
Word. No, it's every single word, or picking up on a chorus and trying to finish up. Oh, I know this song, you know. No, they know every verse and every chorus, yeah.
And they must be just a beautiful sea of characters as well, because it's a real subculture, isn't it? The Misfits universe. It's beyond just music. It's fashion. It's, you know, it's hairstyle. It's tattoos. It's like that kind of rockabilly culture, isn't it? And then there's sort of obviously the horror element as well. And they're like a Motorhead band that unite the punks and the metal people, and they kind of cross all boundaries and genre borders. And it's just like this one cool freak show. It must be every night where it's just like, oh my God, the circus has come to town again. This is great.
Yeah. And that infamous logo.
Yes.
That skull. That infamous logo that we've seen so many times, and even before I heard of the Misfits, I seen that logo, and you know, it's so iconic, and you know, they're really lucky to have something like that, and they're able to you know create merchandising line around it, and you know, it's fantastic. And what, like I said before, what's more brilliant than all the success, it's the fact that Jerry and Glenn have resolved, you know, their issues. And that to me is brilliant.
Positive vibes all around. And will there be more? Will there be more shows, do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, these guys are itching to play. You know, they try to dangle the carrot. Oh, we'll do one show, two shows. But, you know, when we get off stage, and we're all like, you know, concurring on how, you know, great the show was, and just talking about everything, you know, everybody's pleased, everyone's excited, you know, all right, let's play another one, all right, we'll see, we might have one in the future, we don't know. It's like, come on guys, let's do a tour or something. But you know, everyone has their own side projects and other bands, and so this gives us a chance to not burn it out.
Yep.
And you know, and keep it exciting for everyone, including the fans.
Yep.
Yeah, and also gives us a chance to do our own thing.
I love it. So hopefully loads more years of occasional Misfit shows here and there. And they're always, as you say, an event, an occasion, a celebration. Go big.
Yeah.
Go home.
Yeah. Go home for another 6 months, and then do another show. Yeah, I'm excited to play the UK.
Oh, we're excited to have it over here.
Oh man, that would be phenomenal. You know, but they're going to want to have their own stage, props, and you know, all their own, you know, stuff, you know, with them to make it an official, you know, Misfits show. So that's going to take some planning, and hopefully when all this, you know, pandemic is resolved, and, you know, we'll be able to get back to normal business.
Yeah, that's a London O2 Arena show, I think, right there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to go from one cult iconic band with iconic logo. And again, like, there's a whole subculture and fashion and style around this band as well. And to have landed in both of them in the same year, just incredible. And another super, super fun band. These guys, I imagine you have a lot more of a history and a familiarity with from the get-go. Suicidal Tendencies. Is it Mike who hits you up and is like, we're looking for a drummer, do you want to get to work?
Yeah. That's simple. I was boarding one of those ships, one of those cruises, metal cruises.
Yeah, right,
Dead Cross, with the original formation of Dead Cross. And I received this. Oh, wait. I can't remember who hit me up and said, hey, Mike is going to give you a call. It seems like there's always an assistant or a
friend
or someone that calls you up. Hey, man, is it okay if he calls you? It's like, of course, man. What, do I scare people or what? You know, and so I said, yeah. Oh, yeah, now I remember who it was. And so as I was boarding the ship, Mike calls me, and here I am. I'm with another band that I just, you know, just started, and we're going to do our first few shows. We just start chatting, and he said, look, you know, I'm having trouble with this existing drummer. Would you be interested, you know, to do some touring and working with us? And, you know, like the Misfits, you know, like when Glenn Danzig called, you know, when you have the lead vocalist call you, You know, there was no, you know what, man, I need to think about this. You know, I don't know. I might not have time. It's like, no, fuck no. You know, Mike Muir calls you. Hell yeah, man, let's do it. You know?
Yeah, let's get to work.
Let's get to work, yeah. And, you know, they were in a different direction, I believe, musically. You know, they're the punk fire, I believe, was missing. And, you know, he was very interested in bringing that back. And, you know, I told him, obviously, yes, I would do it. And after the very first, or during the very first rehearsal, the band, you know, had gone through the songs first, and then Mike came in and he started, you know, singing along. And after one of the songs, he was so happy, smiling, and just like full of joy. He came up to me and went behind my drums and gave me a big hug. And he said, thank you so much. And, you know, from that moment on, we've been, you know, working together and having a great time doing these shows and these tours all over the world. And, you know, that year, 2016, was an odd year. By contrast, there was a lot of negativity going on in the world and in my personal life. And I was, at that time, with Dead Cross, Misfits, and Suicidal Tendencies, especially with Dead Cross, I was trying to channel everything that was happening in the world, you know, with the Bataclan terrorist attack, and, you know, living in fear, basically, as we all in the Western world were experiencing. You know, I had some musical angst to get out, and so with all the good that was happening, there was negativity, but it seems like I was able to channel all of that into not only Dead Cross, but working with Suicidal and working with the Misfits. And so it was an amazing year, and I'm still holding on to that, you know, year, because it was like the embryonic stage of where I am right now. And, you know, juggling four bands. And I feel very fortunate because, you know, everyone has other projects and everyone's understanding of others, you know, schedules. And, you know, we make sure to send my schedule to Mike, the Misfits. Hey guys, I have a show this day, you know, try to leave this off the calendar, but I'm open, you know, these 3 months. So, you know, everybody, you know, works together and has a very, very good working relationship.
And now things are, you know, kind of, you're busy. Does that positivity feed into the personal life, and does that start to become, you know, better and healthier and happier as well through the work?
Yes.
Do you find
for
that?
Me? Yes. Yeah, absolutely. For me, I've been able to weed out negativity, just some ticks that just, you know, that you just need to pick off, because they're just, you know, like I said before, you know, every 5 to 10 years, I don't know what it is, you know, scholars have said that, you know, humans go through, you know, changes in friends and sometimes even lifestyles. And, so I've been able to weed out, you know, negative aspects of my life and really focus on the good and the healthy, you know, parts. And so that in turn contributes to your ability to learn music in a stress-free environment. You know, you just look at things a little differently without, you know. Because, you know, when you're stressed out, let's say, about learning a body of music, you know, that, you know, could overflow into something else. And, you know, that will be, that will create, you know, some snags in your ability to learn, because it's in the back of your mind. And, you know, so being able to place the different challenges that you have in your life and their respective little boxes, and then just put them away when you're done with them. Or, oh, I need to go back, reference to this one, and I need to go back and work on this. And, you know, once you have that down, and I'm happy that within the past 5 years, I've been able to master that. And I think the reason for that, the results are the ability to juggle, you know, four different bands. And it's definitely, I feel like I'm in a really good place, you know, my state of mind, energy, health, and everything that goes along with it. Yeah, everything's in a good place.
I'm happy to hear that, Dave. I'm happy to hear that, and rightly so. You know, you should be content, you should be proud, and you should be excited about the future. And just to kind of bring it full circle again and touch on this Bungle album one more time. So that must have been an incredibly, I don't know whether therapeutic is the right word, but a very cool process to, you know, especially for those guys, for Trevor, for Trey, for Mike, to revisit this record that they wrote in 1986 when they were childhood friends, all these years later, to reconvene with yourself and with Scott Ian, like, you know, two of the dudes that are just from that era, which would have been influencing the music that they were writing at that time. You know, 1986, thrash was just exploding, obviously Anthrax and Slayer being, you know, key players in that scene. And to get the five of you together to make this Raging Wrath of the Easter Bunny record, were you all in the studio together, and how was the process? I bet it was a trip. I bet it was wild.
Well, what was great about the process is that we learned the music, studied the music before we ever got into a room together. So we were exchanging demo tapes, re-recordings of you know, the Bungle record that Trey had done in his studio, and then I would, you know, send him you know, a version with my drumming, and that was circulated around the band. And, you know, so there was working prior to the shows. Then the rehearsals came along. We had, I think, five or six rehearsals before our first show. And those songs are brutal.
They are brutal.
The complexity, the length of those songs.
Yeah, there's a few 8 to 9 minutes in there, isn't there?
Yeah. And it's one part into another section. It's like, oh my God, how am I going to remember all this? You know, of course, you know, I've had to make, you know, notes, and even Patton had to have notes on stage, and Trevor, I think, as well. And so we just really had to buckle down and work hard in trying to, you know, deliver this music live. But my biggest complaint, you know, of the process of releasing music and recording and releasing music is that you record the music, you don't play it live, you record it, you learn it in a rehearsal studio, and then after time, you know, you release the record and then you play it live. This music, we were performing it live first.
Yeah, you did it in reverse.
So we were able to capture the energy that a live show demands.
Yep.
And we were immediately able to enter a studio with the blood flowing, you know, from those shows through our bodies. You know, we were still resonating and vibrating with excitement from the shows.
Did you get in the studios fairly soon after the shows, Dave?
Yes. The only thing that held us back is that both Mike and I were really sick with the flu. And we got really sick in Brooklyn, in New York.
Yeah.
And we needed one extra day off. So our last show was the 14th. And so we had said, okay, we travel home on the 15th, start on February 16th, which was my birthday. And I said, guys, I called them up, and I was still recovering from this fever that I had. And I said, guys, let's just take one more day off, complete. So we took off the 16th and then resumed and started working on the 17th, and which was very helpful because, I don't know, there's a couple promo pictures and you see me passed out on the couch, you know, at the studio. And that's because I was recovering from the flu and, you know, the touring. And so we were able to record this album, all of us together. I was obviously isolated because of my drums, but I had everybody in my view. I had Trey, you know, Scott, Trevor, and Mike was singing along. And we recorded all the songs together,
which amazing.
Was fantastic. Yeah.
And there's some, I mean, Raping Your Mind, Bungle Grind, Mathematics, Erasis. There's some incredible tunes on there, and it's so different to any Mr. Bungle record that's preceded it. Way heavier. I think it's going to be a real surprise and a good one at that for a lot of people out there. I know there's a few tracks already doing the rounds, but it's a hard hitting record. It sounds like a really fun record as well. It sounds like you had a hell of a time making it, and as you say, when you're coming off the back of live shows, you're already dialed in, aren't you? And you're just hungry to go.
Yeah, and the album, you hear it. You hear a live energy. And I'm happy that we were able to capture that, because there's like a ferocity when you're playing live, and the adrenaline, you know, is kicked in and you're just like ready to slaughter. And yeah, at least, you know, my drums.
That's,
you know?
That's what you do as well.
Yeah, I have to do it that way. And you know, to be able to capture that is really special. And then, like I said, you know, going back to the beginning of what I was trying to say, that's what a lot of records miss and could have much more. That's why some of the recordings are just so much more exciting. And, you know, it's like, man, I was 5 BPMs faster on this. And when I recorded it, I mean, like, let's say, for example, another band, let's say I'm playing live. I mean, I'm playing some live shows. The songs recorded are much slower than when they're performed live. I think this is going to be actually, the Bungle shows are going to be actually the same with that same energy. And I don't think we'll be able to go faster than that, because then it'll just sound ridiculous. But actually, the recording of this upcoming new pay-per-view show that Mr. Bungle has, it's going to be, it's brutal, and it's fast, and it's exciting, just like the record.
Hell yeah. I got to ask you two things finally before I let you go, Dave. The first is, in regards to the Misfits, do you think there will be any new material, or will they leave that catalog where it is and just, you know, take out the hits and keep it there in a time capsule and preserve it? Or can you
it's
not
hard
say?
For me, it's hard for me to, you know, predict, because, you know, life has, you know, throws you so many, you know, curveballs, and, you know, that you really can't, it's just difficult to predict. I personally feel that they should exhaust this music that they have, the old catalog, because
it's so,
you know,
good,
frankly,
and there's so much
it's
of it
that good, and it hasn't been exhausted. You know, by the time everybody, you know, discovered the Misfits, you know, they had already broken up and they weren't playing live anymore. And I feel that with the current lineup, I feel it would be a great record if we do, but I don't, you know, it's not something I would push. I would just like, let's just play all this, you know, the classic albums and keep enjoying ourselves and go from there.
It's crazy how many hits they've got. Like, not hits in the traditional sense. Everybody, when they look at Misfits, will go, oh, Last Caress, they're a one-hit wonder. But you're like, no, the thing with these guys is every song's a hit. Like, the way it's written,
yes.
They're so catchy.
Exactly. you know, and it's weird, because when I listened to those songs, and when I had to study them when I first was asked to join the band, there were so many similarities to classic rock and roll structures and chord progressions that made me feel that I had heard this melody somewhere before. It made me feel I heard this chord progression before, or it was just very you're just, it's recognizable. And so, you know, with that said, I feel like this music has many, many years of live performances without, you know, the fans ever getting tired of them.
Amen. And I know you're an extremely busy man, and I know you have many commitments, and your file is obviously already full. However, is there anybody out there as just a fan of music that you would one day absolutely love to work with? If the opportunity came, you just put down everything and run to the situation. Is there anybody like that in your life that at this stage in the game you think, man, they're still doing it, and I would love to work with that person one day?
Wow. I think that question is so wide. You know, there's so many. It's not just a particular genre either. It's many different genres. And I think a lot of people would be surprised, you know.
Coming from the guy who's done like Vivaldi tracks, I don't think at this stage anybody would be surprised by you, David. I mean that as okay. A huge compliment.
Yeah. No, you're right. You know, so, I mean, there's many, many. To pinpoint one, because I'm a big fan of James Brown.
Hell yeah.
And Bootsy. Funk. And, of course, he's a producer. Yeah. You know, Bootsy Collins.
Yep.
Just to jam with that guy, you know. That's the only guy that right now that just crosses my mind. But there's many musicians. There's so many great, so much great talent out there, and legendary talent that, you know, it'd be funny to see the collaboration. You know, and not funny in a sarcastic or disrespectful way. You know, it's just like, whoa, it happened, you know, or it can happen. And look how the genres met. It almost goes back to the open mind of Rick Rubin and working, you know, with various acts and making it happen. And I kind of feel that way when it comes to drums. You know, there's always a possibility of a collaboration with the most random, you know, musician that you think of. So,
oh man, the rhythm section connect of you and Bootsy would be unreal. It would be otherworldly great. I'm sure it would. What a great pick. Love it.
It would be fun. It would be a lot of fun. And the stories, that's thing about this new Bungle, album has been, it's listening to Trey, Trevor, and Mike talk about, you know, like a fly, I'm just sitting there like a fly on the wall, just minding my own business. And they're just chatting about some random guy that they knew in high school and, you know, just their stories. And, you know, it's just endearing to see this. And to watch their friendship, and then every now and then you come across a picture online of them when they were kids. I just recently saw one. Patton was on drums, and obviously Trey and Trevor, on their respective instruments, you know, and I was just blown away. It's like, wow, you know, I relate to those times because I was there as well, not in their world, but in my own world. So I see how much that means to them and how important it is for them to, you know, put this record out. And I'm so happy to be a part of it, and I'm honored, and, you know, I couldn't be happier, dude.
I love it, man. What a pleasure talking to you today, Dave. Thank you so much for giving up your time, and congratulations on everything. And I'm really happy to hear that life's going good. And once the doors reopen, there's going to be so many shows for you. You better, are you keeping your chops tight? Are you practicing every day? I guess, when was the last time you had a jam with another human? Has it been a while?
It was recent.
Nice.
Yeah, no, the chops, I was worried there for a minute because I had to pick up drumsticks, what, since February. And yeah, you know, I played a little bit here and there, but, you know, recently I got to work on a movie score for an upcoming Netflix movie. And you know, I realized, okay, I still have it. Great. You know, so, it's I'm trying to stay as healthy as I can, you know, eating properly, exercising, doing what a typical 55-year-old is supposed to do. Well, supposed to do, you know. So, I mean, I'm doing my best.
Right on. And what you can do with the restrictions in place as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you again for your time, dude. And I hope to see you in the new year at one of these shows and one of these bands doing your thing. And I can't wait to hear that new Dead Cross record in the new year as well, man. I await that with great excitement.
Fantastic. Well, I'm excited for it to wrap up and you know, put a nice bow on it and release it as well. But in due time. But it's there. It's done, and it's slowly being completed. Oh, I just found the Mr. Bungle Brooklyn Steel set list from February 10th.
There you go.
Okay, so it started off with the theme from Mr. Rogers.
Of course.
Anarchy of the Anus, I think it's called, Spreading the Thighs of Death. And then a COC song, I believe, must have been Lost for Words. I hope I'm not wrong with that. It went into Glutton. Malfunction, Raping Your Mind, Sit There, Bungle Grind, Mathematics, Hell Awaits, Into Summer Breeze by Seals and Crofts, Erasis, then it goes into Cold War, then Hypocrites, Cucaracha, Habla Español, World Up My Anus, and Faith No More, Teaser into 7 seconds, Sudden Death, and then USA by The Exploited.
Wow.
That was the last song. Yeah, that was the set list.
Always surprises in the mix, isn't there, with Patton? Always.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
good.
With La Cucaracha and Summer Breeze. Yeah, that's when I had to pull out the Glockenspiel. Yeah, I bet you nobody knew how to play Glockenspiel, you know.
And most of that new record is in there as well. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, the new old record. Do you know, the year that I was born was 1986, Dave.
Oh, my God. I was 21. Jeez.
You have a brilliant day, my friends, and I hope
too.
To see you in 2021. Thank you so much for your time, dude.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.